with my two special guests, Todd and Jeff from HardCarSecurity.com. And today we're going to talk about marijuana transportation security. I'm not aware, or I haven't been aware, Todd, because we talked once before, but I wasn't aware this is such a critical component of the business, because you just don't go down to the bank and drop in $100,000 cash. It's just you don't put it on your credit card. It's a cash business, and that has to be transported in non-traditional means, I suppose, because Brinks is going to pick it up for you. So tell us about that. Give us an overview of this industry. This is really kind of fascinating to me.
Well, definitely it is what you said, but we prefer to use the word cannabis instead of marijuana.
Oh, now why is that? Right? Faux pas. I'm sorry, everybody. Don't not watch me because I said that.
Yeah.
How come?
No, it's because it really is a legitimate medicine that naturally occurs here on our planet, and marijuana is a Mexican slang word.
Oh, interesting. Okay,
that just kind of stuck here in the U.S., but the true biological name is cannabis.
All right, excellent.
And regarding, yes, it is a cash business right now. But that's changing. And we went out and got licensed in all of the state and local licensing and permits for armored vehicles, transportation of high-value assets.
Oh, good.
With legitimate private patrol operator licenses and uniforms that were approved by the state. And we're slowly picking up customers that understand that this is where it's going. And they want to be in front like us. And so we're moving some cash to private vaults that are fortified. But we're also banking at certain banks.
Okay, I was wondering about that because, Todd, we talked about that briefly. It's not there yet, right? I mean, we're trying to get there. But the banks don't want to do it because technically it's federally illegal. Is that the whole conflict?
Yeah,
what
is
it?
There's a whole FinCEN regulation that talks about how they can take the money and put it into the Federal Reserve.
Okay.
So it's more of a challenge for the banks to stay within compliance of the federal laws and regulations.
Yeah, makes sense.
And we are working with some local institutions in California, so we're able to help that way and move things forward.
Now, what kind of volume are we talking about? We're talking about millions.
Millions for us right now, not billions. We're getting there.
But just your company's millions.
Just our company's millions.
And I noticed you operate. I saw a little thing, a little robot video, which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Patrol one of the farms out there in Desert Hot Springs?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
They don't pick up the cash for you, do they?
No, they don't.
Someday they will.
Not yet.
Yeah, it's going to be a drone one day that just flies up.
Nice.
Takes off. So what kind of schedule are you talking about? Do you guys pick up five times a day? Is it once a day? Is it once a week? I'm not trying to disclose any secrets for burglars or robbers, but it's a lot of volume in this business.
Right now, we're on a call basis, so when there's a call for service, then we schedule it and take it from there. As far as a regular schedule, we have one client that gives us two calls a week, but we've dovetailed it so that we're delivering product and receiving cash and then vaulting that cash. So then the next day, it's already been counted, processed, and brought to their bank. So that's a steady customer. But everyone else that we move cash for, it is when the phone rings for now.
Okay.
Because again, there's that, is this going to be okay yet? So everyone's just kind of on the fence.
People are using their intuition to kind of, we don't want to get on a schedule like we see in the movies where the giant heists go on.
Right.
And every day at 2 o'clock, we pick up $1 million, right?
We're going to hit that guy then?
It kind of makes more sense, really.
Sure.
To do it that way.
Yep.
Now, do you find that staffing's any different? You know, do you need a different sort of employee to do this?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, it makes the most sense to right a wrong at the same time that we started HardCar. We also noticed that our best employees were combat veterans of the United States military.
That's interesting. Okay.
From all the branches. And so that became our focus, and we've successfully hired about 8 right now. We have 20 in the queue where they've been fully vetted. Their resumes are exactly what we're looking for. We've interviewed them. And as we grow, we bring more on.
Well, that's great because there's a big push. I get calls all the time to hire vets.
Right.
And to get into the traditional, sit in a parking lot and guard a bunch of cars, that's not their thing, right?
No, it's not a career.
No,
it's not a
career.
We talked about that a bunch of times. Actually, believe it or not, we'd prefer to keep vets out of that profession because guarding itself is going away. We talked about that before.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Guarding in itself is laborious. It's time-consuming where things break and people have problems. It's easier to work with automation.
It doesn't utilize their skill sets that the greatest military on the planet has taught them.
Right.
So you put them in a guard post, they go, you know, absolutely insane. Stir crazy in a day. So it's, we've given them careers. We're giving them something that they're transporting, a medicine that they themselves use to help them combat what they contacted when they were in combat.
But they don't use it when
PTSD.
They're driving.
Right, exactly. Not when they're driving.
Not when they're driving now.
Just no. No, the ingestion of the medicine is usually when they get home after a long day of moving product and cash around.
So now I went to the police academy, 3 years ago now. In fact, my license is going to expire pretty soon. So I was post-certified. It's expired in November. Here's the latest I got on marijuana. I was very surprised at this because back in the day when I was a cop, this didn't seem to be – well, it was the 80s. It was the cocaine, right? According to police statistics, marijuana business, most violent – most weapons, most heists, all that kind of stuff. And this is 3 years ago, and now that it's legal, I'm sure that goes away. But are you finding this is still going on? And who are the competitors? Is other competitors doing this? Is it some, you know, gang trying to do a hit? Or who are the bad guys in this?
I would say it's opportunists.
Okay.
Okay? So because there's not enough training to our other competitors, they're the ones getting robbed. We're a hard target.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Makes
all
sense.
Right. So we're not going to get hit as likely as, let's call her Susie in her Prius, when she's delivering product to a dispensary. She's the target.
Are they going after
she doesn't know what she's doing.
Is it cash first or the crop first? What are they trying to steal?
Both.
Either. Yeah, both.
Both.
Oh, really? Okay.
There was one last week where they did 200 cigarettes and $20,000
pre-rolls.
In cash. Well, yeah, sorry, pre-rolls.
Right.
And $20,000 in cash. That's ridiculous.
But we're with our thumb on the pulse of this news,
right.
And we get feeds, and we're seeing two or three of these a week.
Sure.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, not on your not
no,
on you.
No,
your
no,
clients.
No.
No, not on hardcarsecurity.com.
No, but it helps build our case.
Just to clarify that.
No.
Yeah.
Right.
If you want a combat veteran to deliver your product safely and on time and courteously, then you should use our company, Hard Car Security. But if you just want to trust it to Joe or Susie, you're risking. Yeah, we also carry insurance, real legitimate cargo insurance, so that if there is a hit and we give up the vehicle to live another day, then it's insured.
That's good. Okay.
Yeah, just like cash is from a Brinks truck or Loomis, any of those. All that money's insured.
So I did a show with a gentleman back east, you know, Massachusetts, some state I had no idea had its own manufacturing plants for this stuff. I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? Really versed. And one of the things he told me was, you know, when they come in and start regulating this, they put up rules and regulations on security.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if California's there. They have delivered. Okay.
Yes.
And we're going to call that a compliance issue, right? And did you find that your compliance issues were any different than a regular armored car company because of the marijuana component?
They did, I think, vet us and dig in a little deeper when it came to our procedures and our actual armored vehicles because we are discreet. So all of our armoring was done on the inside.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I saw your website.
As opposed
and those vans,
to the big box trucks
low profile.
Are obviously a bank truck when you see them. So we didn't go with those.
For obvious reasons.
For obvious reasons.
Now, what are they? I forget what they call that. There's a term for those compliance regulations. Like each marijuana clinic has to have a security plan. Is that what it is? And do you have to have a security plan for your business because of what you're operating within the same industry?
Yes.
Okay. Difficult to comply with? Anything out of the ordinary? Or
just maximum security on everything.
The van seems easier.
Redundancy.
Yeah.
Because when I was looking at some of these clinics and some of these manufacturing plants, I'm going, really, that doesn't seem like enough to me. I thought they were a little light on them.
Yeah.
What are you finding in California? Are people putting the money in? They seem so cheap. I don't know if you've seen my Security Not campaign. Mm. Have you seen that?
No.
Okay. You should.
I should.
You should be following me on Instagram. All right. So every time I see a guard doing something goofy, I take a picture of him and I go, Security? Not.
Okay.
And one of his favorite ones is this marijuana clinic up on Coinga. All right. It has this guy standing out there, and he wears some kind of this yellow, you know, what's that toboggan thing in the Olympics, like a luge,
like a cap. Luge helmet.
Yeah, it's like a soft cap, and it has
nice.
A little, and he has you know commando pants and
nice,
and it's just the weirdest looking thing. It's a completely made up uniform.
Okay,
and he stands out in front of the marijuana clinic.
Okay,
and he stands there under an umbrella all day, and you say, I don't want to go in there. I just wouldn't want to go in there. It's weird.
Yeah, the optics on that, Chuck, are horrible. Yeah. We're actually with a solution that takes the security guard and puts them inside the dispensary, out of harm's way.
Oh, now you're doing guard work as well. In compliance
we do
with
provide
the train station.
It when there's no alternative,
okay.
But we prefer to remove that from the equation. It doesn't look good. You don't want to go in.
No, right.
And they're a sitting duck. I mean, come on.
Oh, I know.
How easy it is to take that guy.
And he wasn't even armed. And, you know, I don't advocate armed guards for all kinds of reasons.
Even easier if he's unarmed. So we have technology, Todd can explain further, that puts the guard inside and vets the person that's coming up to the door for weapons. And Todd can get to the details on how that solution works. It's out of Canada.
So the best things come out of Canada. Every time I go to Asda's or something, it's a Canadian company.
Something about those Canadian companies.
Well, we got a lot of time in the winter there to sit up there and think about stuff. So before you talk about that, Todd,
sure.
I want to ask you a question about this part. So what I find in my general observations, when I was in the guard business, I was approached several times to do a clinic, and I went, no, no, a lot of money was thrown at me, right?
Right.
Because they didn't want to spend the money I wanted to spend on how to make the place safe. And I'm thinking, you guys are transporting millions of dollars for a teeny-weeny dispensary, and you don't want to spend a couple hundred grand on cameras and access control. And that I didn't get that part. Is there something I'm missing in that industry that doesn't want to put security into probably the business that requires the most?
I'll just say one thing, and then I'll defer to Todd. Very typically, in any business I've ever provided security for, unfortunately, but security is the last page on their business plan.
That's totally true.
And they just think of it as a burden.
Well, it's a cost driver in most businesses. They'll argue it's cost.
It eats into their margin.
But, I mean, these guys seem to have some big margins.
Yeah,
I might be wrong about that. I don't know. Oh, here's $50,000. Go put some cameras in. No. I'm going to go down and get an Arlo.
Yeah,
and stick it in wire
to
my
Costco,
home video.
Right? Yeah,
exactly.
Sure. Yeah. So we're not your typical guard and camera solution.
Right, right.
And Todd can explain why our solution is way past or next generation from guard and camera, which everybody uses right now.
All right, Mr. Todd, take it away. Tell us.
Thank you, Chuck. So for the general audience out there, the reason that guards are difficult is because, as Chuck will tell you, when he had his business, guards don't show up. They come in hungover. They've got girlfriend problems. They have all kinds of issues. The issue for us is keeping the weapons out of the facility, right? If you can keep the weapons out of the facility, it doesn't matter. They can't get in. So we secured a relationship with Patriot One, which is out of Canada, which has a groundbreaking, cutting-edge technology that uses a specific type of technology that you can actually embed within walls. You can put it in the floor or the ceiling. You can actually make it so it's in a buttressed portfolio outside of a building. So the idea is the person has to go past that to be able to get inside. It's a lot different than what's in your typical airport right now. This system actually uses artificial intelligence and learns the weapon.
Cool.
So it actually figures out what the signature is. And when you put multiples of them out, it talks to all those systems. So even an IED, it'll identify an IED before it even gets through a facility.
How far out do you place those? How far out the perimeter?
It can be right out in front of your door, out in front of the studio here.
Right. Okay.
It's fantastic.
That's cool.
It's the best thing that I've seen. And I actually brought a technology to market, a weapons detection technology, that this new one from Canada supersedes by far.
Very good. Now, what is the motivation to your client, so to speak, to think it's a great idea to stick this in the back of their Yugo and drive down to the deposit and put it in a box and say, okay, I mean, that's old school because, their music, their business was kind of not technically legal back in the day and, that kind of thing. I get that part.
Yep.
But listen, and by the way, I'm not for marijuana. I'm just not my thing. I got all kinds of reasons, but it's not a moral thing, right?
Right, right.
But good old-fashioned common sense and security, listen, I'm a capitalist at heart. You want to make some money? That's great. But don't put yourself in jeopardy. Put your boys in jeopardy.
Right.
Is that changing rapidly or is people still a little bit... No, okay.
For us, not fast enough.
All right, interesting.
We don't want guns in our industry.
Right.
We don't want the bad press that comes of it. We don't want the families that are grieving from this. We don't want any guns in our industry for obvious reasons. So we provide the solutions to make sure that doesn't happen. So we believe that our model should be the standard
now,
for this industry.
I remember when this came out, legally, there was supposed to be, you probably know this, there's supposed to be, quote, 400 legal clinics in L.A.
Right.
And we got 1,600.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
And then everybody just said, oh, screw it, because, you know, the law is going to get passed. And 5 years later, it got passed. Now, are all those 1,600 clinics now, quote, legal? And are they all subject to this compliance? And by the way, do we even know who they are?
Sure.
Because if they were just opening up a storefront and nobody walked in there and checked them.
Sure.
Who's doing the compliance? Do we have an ABC rating for marijuana clinics like restaurants?
It's coming.
Is it? Okay.
Oh, it's definitely coming.
All right. What would that entail?
Well, you have certain, let's call it geolocation systems already, something like weed maps,
right,
where they can actually geolocate and find where the dispensaries are.
Okay. That'll be a compliance part of your security package, that you have to have that in your business so people know in the government where you are?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So the government's very far along on that process of being able to establish where they are. Now, the compliance side of it is another thing, where they're going to bring in a whole different division in the government to be able to make that compliance happen, because you have certain regulations, even for those dispensaries, that have to have a security plan in place before they get their license.
Yeah, right, right.
So 2018, January 1, all those guys got a reissue for a state license, same like any other business in this industry.
And the city have more authority or influence on a clinic? Well, they seem to think they can, because they can.
Yeah.
The city seems to think they can do whatever they want against federal law nowadays.
Sure.
But can they overregulate a state ordinance, or how does it work?
I don't think they can override a state ordinance, but they can certainly make it difficult.
To enforce, or if they don't like it, they can change it what they want to do.
Okay, yeah, sure. They can add city ordinances to the state laws and make you follow both.
Oh, more burdensome. Yeah, yeah.
Sure, it could be more burdensome, or there may be a specific reason for a regulation based on an area. But that also might be a good regulation. You just don't know it yet because we're still too new to this.
Now, what do you guys worry about? What keeps you up at night? What, you know, what part of this business are you really concerned with? You know, 3 months out, 6 months out, a year, something, things aren't
not
happening.
Having enough
not having enough
vehicles to handle the...
Yeah, oh, coming, that's a good
Chuck.
Thing to have.
It's coming.
It's, we're just flat out. I mean, in all seriousness, it is growing and growing and growing, and we're just running rapid. So we need to have more vehicles. We're at that process right now. We've ordered some already, and we're ordering more as we can.
We have the drivers, and we have the training, and we have the permits and the licensing.
You're the Uber of the cannabis business.
Yeah, my business partner, Todd, is already speaking to Uber, actually.
Oh, very interesting. Any lessons learned from other states?
Yes.
Failures, successes, that kind of thing. What's happening? You know, I heard, great things for Colorado, and now I hear disaster for Colorado. Depends on who you're listening to. But
well, it's all in how it's reported in the press, right? So Colorado had basically a deflation in prices because they had an overabundance of supply.
Oh, interesting.
And when that happened, then it shifted who the lower-hanging fruit was. The smaller individual mom-and-pop grows weren't able to compete with the big grows. So you had a compression in the industry, and a lot of those people went out of business. So now you have a resurgence of the Colorado market space that's more specific towards larger manufacturing. Conversely, in California, you're looking at large manufacturing that's coming on to take the step in place of a lot of these smaller growers, like in Desert Hot Springs, for instance.
Right.
You've got 200 locations that have already been bought. They're all building out right now.
200?
200.
Oh, I should have bought a property out there.
I'm telling you should have. It was $5,000 an acre 2 years ago. It's now $500,000.
I was looking for there's a 10-acre house I saw out there by Capone's Old Hotel. And I kept saying, we got to buy that. And I don't want to live out there. It's too far away. I should have done it.
Well.
I know.
It's okay.
Hindsight.
Next time.
The thing I learned about the back east, I think it was Massachusetts, but don't quote me, but was that this is becoming, it's big business, but it's not big pharma.
Right.
And that part I don't get. I mean, it's a federal law, so they can't manufacture things that are federally illegal. I get all that part. But it's just weird to me that we've jumped from, you know, your friend growing in the backyard and everything's okay. And, you know, back in the day, we used to have a baggie and put you in jail for it. And then we wrote you tickets and all this kind of stuff. And now people are manufacturing it and distributing it, and it's a whole business on billion-dollar level, but federally illegal. It's just...
mind-boggling.
What's going on with that? It's just weird to me. And I'm a little concerned of the safety involved. I mean, not that the government's great at protecting anybody, except with our military. That's the best. But give them some other task, and they fall apart.
Right.
And I don't know that I want them in the FDA business any more than they are, because every pill you take on TV says it's going to commit suicidal thoughts and kill you. So, you know, I'll stick with aspirin.
Yeah.
But what's being done on that in the industry? Are there people lobbying for this kind of stuff, or people trying to say, listen, we got to get this thing lined up? Because I just think it's going to create a huge conflict and make the industry unsafe. It's already a little unsafe because it's coming out of a criminal element. I jump all in and support it if we get it all legitimized. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's a moral choice to make your own choice to do that. I don't pass judgment on people like that. But let's get it lined up and make it all by the book and straight and, you know, that kind of thing.
Do you remember when Prohibition stopped?
Sure. My grandmother tells me about it all the time. She used to go to speakeasies.
Well, there you go. Yeah. She'll tell you exactly how that came out of the, let's call it the doldrum, right? When it was, was everybody was trying to hide and figure out the best way to market. Now, this is the same level as Prohibition. The only difference is it's taking a medicine that should have been legalized a long time ago and just making it legal now. So I think you're right. I think the transition period will probably be the next 2 to 3 years. And then after that, all the little nuances will be worked out. But right now, we are in a very big flux. It's just a transfer period.
Is there any state I can go to that won't be doing this? I might want to live there. until it all blows over and everybody's okay.
I don't think so. Even Texas is finally beginning. They're on a pilot program of a half a dozen retail dispensaries.
Maybe one of like the Samoan Islands.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I got my little back 10 acres in Arizona there up on the Superstition Mountain and just kind of see what happens.
Yeah.
Is anybody in the business, any of the industries, the associations, all those kind of things, because there's a lot of different associations for this, does anybody ever get into the social impact discussions, the philosophy discussions, all those kind of things?
Sure,
and
sure.
Let's not say morality, because I don't bring morality to these discussions at all. But there are some impacts on these kind of things.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, we just did a whole study for the National Cannabis Industry Association on the socioeconomic impact and the community impact, and it'll be available from the NCIA on their website probably within the next week to two.
Right.
It talks about both the community impact for banks as well as the socioeconomic impact for the local communities, how it impacts police departments, how it impacts the use of funds for the city. Most cities will see an uptick in their revenue because of taxation.
It's okay. That's a big driver. You know, yeah.
Right. So the rest of it for implementing or increasing funding to police and increasing, let's just say, across the board how the cities will respond to it, it's all been laid out already. We just have to make it all happen.
What is the next big thing in this business? What am I missing? We talked briefly.
Research.
Okay.
Absolutely. The next big thing is really beginning to know from a clinical trial level.
No, because it's all
exactly how beneficial and valuable this medicine is.
100%.
Now that's
absolutely that is the next biggest.
That's a great point because I have these discussions with the nieces and nephews all the time. That let's just say are friendly to this sort of stuff. And blah, 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 this study and blah, 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 that study. And this proves this and this proves that. And I go, okay, hold on, stop talking because the AMA didn't do any studies.
Right.
Drug companies don't do studies. Nobody does studies in that area because it's, quote, illegal or has been, right?
Right.
So we don't really have, and we have data.
Sure.
Question is, what's the validity? How do you back it up? And to your point, yeah, we need to have some actual bona fide dyed-in-the-wool experts that have been doing this 100 years to say, here's the actual numbers on it. And if that changes the social beliefs now, could that impact the industry?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Reefer Madness was a long time ago.
Sure.
That movie. But, you know, I've seen the effects of not just marijuana. I'm picking on all drugs, right? If you misuse anything, you got a huge problem in your life, right?
So there's a big difference between what we consume that's legal that are more in a category of poison.
Right.
Tobacco, alcohol.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, those are equally valid points. Yeah.
I don't feel like taking any of those synthetic opioids now that I used to for a legitimate back injury. So now I'm on a microdose of cannabis every night before I go to bed. And that ratio of it's a CBD to THC ratio is very low in THC. So there's no psychoactive effect. I don't get, quote, high. That's not what I'm after. I'm after the medicine part. So I can tell you statistically, I know of one person that absolutely loves this product.
Yeah.
That's me. But I also have a lot of people in our industry that report the same exact benefit back. They've gotten off of a VA cocktail, for example, a combat bat.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a huge issue.
Opiates, oh.
And a lot of that VA cocktail is experimental.
Sure.
There's no science behind that.
Right. No, I agree with you. I mean, abuse of anything in excess is not good.
Right.
I think we probably have enough information to understand that, you know, you're not going to have a psychotic episode smoking a joint once in a while.
Sure.
But on the other hand, I'll tell you a funny story. I had one of the studios in Hollywood was my client in the guard business. And I walk in the guard shack one day to say, hey, boys, what's going on? What's happening? What's that smell? why do you smell like marijuana? Oh, well, you know, I got a note from my doctor. I said, your doctor's note says you can come into my guard shack and smoke pot on duty. Well, yeah, it's got a note right here. Yeah. And I'm going, okay, hold on, stop. You're out of here. You're fired. Yeah. Lawyer contacts me. They come in, and I talk to her, and I say, look, all I know is right here in this little piece of paper you brought me, it says, teeny-weeny print right down there. By the doctor, may not operate vehicle. You're going to be impaired. Why is there a culture that insists that marijuana is not impairment? I know a lot of people that say, oh, alcohol is impairment. Marijuana's not impairment. And let's take the moral thing out of it. Let's take the medical stuff out of it. You're impaired. And I don't get that disconnect in the social aspect of it.
Chuck, you know? I can tell you straight up, if you are ingesting a large quantity of cannabis and you jump into a vehicle, you can't drive as perfect as you could sober. I know this to be a fact.
Okay. Fair statement. Right.
I mean, it's a true statement. That's easy. I think there's even a bigger picture here. It's a buzzkill, as they say in the industry. Who wants to try to navigate this giant metal thing with tires down a road when you should be experiencing this amazing effect of the medicine? And so you literally, it's kind of a contra against each other. So you're fighting the effect of the medicine to try to stay focused on keeping it between the white lines. It just doesn't make sense. So I know most people just go, I can't drive right now, because they don't want to waste the experience they are on right now.
And
into a vehicle?
I mean, a lot of drunk drivers kill people. And,
sure.
What I don't hear is, you know, people impaired with marijuana kill people. Well, of course they do. I've seen cases, but I just don't get why one is considered better than the other or worse than the other.
By the way,
alcohol is no great thing. That you know, it's
why is it socially
terrible.
Acceptable to be able to walk down the street going to a friend of yours with a bottle of wine? Why is that?
As long as it's closed, it's perfectly legal. Opened,
yes.
Not so legal.
But if you're walking down the street with a bottle of vodka, you look like you're some kind of derelict. Why is that?
Oh, no, it's true.
It's
all
social,
these things come into
social
play.
Impression.
That's true.
Right? So I think a lot of it.
Put a brown paper bag on your $100 bottle of Rothschild,
and you look like
you're drunk.
Right?
That's right.
So
true.
And I think
optics
with time, people are going to get that. They're going to realize that, holy cow, this has been around for thousands of years. The Egyptians used it.
Right.
You know, it's been around a long time. Kind of the ironic thing is, going back to your original point, do you know who the largest holder of patents is on cannabis in the United States?
No, I don't.
The United States government.
Yep.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. For what? What
For
are they?
All the medicinal uses that were discovered back in the 40s.
Oh, yes. So they're holding that.
So they're holding quite a bit of, let's call it IP.
Yeah.
And there is a time, and that's not conspiracy theory. That's something you research and find on the documentation from the U.S. Patent and Trademark Organization. So I think it's just social acceptance and timing. And if we had had this and it was okay when you and I were in our teens, it'd be a heck of a lot. We wouldn't be having this conversation now. 15 years from now, when you and I are more gray, the kids are going to be looking back and going, why were they having those conversations back in the 20s? You know, in 2020, why were they having those conversations?
Yeah.
It'll change.
Well, we certainly could use some calming down in today's political climate. So
yes, we could.
I'm on the fence. I'm open-minded. But I'm glad security, anyway, is being looked at seriously, because it was basically absence 5 years ago. What security? What are you talking about?
Agreed.
You
know? Agreed. Yeah, so, well, we're here.
Hardcarsecurity.com.
You bet.
All right. Todd and Jeff, thanks for coming on the show. I'm glad you guys can
make
it.
Chuck.
Any
Twitter handles, anything you want to get people to get a hold of you guys? Or
Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, we're all over at hardcar.com. You bet.
And where are you located physically?
Palm Springs and a little bit up north.
Okay, excellent. Well, thanks for coming on Security Guy TV,
SecurityGuyRadio.com. Appreciate you.
Thanks, guys.
Tune in next week for an exciting episode right here on SecurityGuyTV.com. Thanks.